Hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. I am solo podcasting. Before we dive into today's cornucopia of topics, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to send this episode to multiple friends. Also, to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the best way that we can stay in touch. It's also where I announce my swag drops. So I am back to creating products, because even though I've been advised by many marketing people that it's totally off topic and it's confusing and my plate is super very full. That might be right. My plate is super very full, which might be foolish, but I can't not do it. I just love emblazoning my illustrations on things. And so, because Instagram's new user agreement is so disgusting and slavey, I am not posting my products on Instagram. So really, I would say it's the only way, it might be the only way, to keep abreast of the products that I'm putting out is by way of my newsletter, because I am announcing them when I do them. I'm starting an astrology series, and I'm dropping each sign as we approach the season. Now, if you're getting antsy for Scorpio swag or Sag swag, DM me and I'm happy to do my best to accommodate you. But this is my current structure. And the only way to find out in a timely fashion about my product drops is by way of my newsletter, dannykatz.com. I'm also told that the footers are pretty hilarious. So there's that. What else? My Pop Propaganda homeschool course has recently been slashed on the donation front, making it super very affordable for anyone and everyone. So do check that out by way of my website, dannykatz.com. I think that's it for housekeeping and commercials. I really look forward to doing official ad reads for official products who are officially paying me. In the meantime, we're rolling solo, we're rolling sovereign. That's it. So a few things. Yes, I'm still having an eye issue if you're watching me with your eyeballs. Although I checked my stats and I'm noticing it's kind of alarming. Well, it's not alarming. I was just surprised that like 90% of people tuning in are listening on a smartphone. So I'm assuming if you're tuning in on a smartphone, you're not watching, so you can't see that I'm wearing rose pink color therapy glasses. My eyes are still figuring out their apocalypse upgrade, their ascension symptomings. So I get to view the world through rose-colored glasses. We have a few topics today, and I'm wondering where to start. I don't think I've shared this yet, but I had this breakthrough at the end of last year on my Know Thyself Salon call. And while I'm at it, I will let you guys know that Know Thyself Salon, which used to be called Saturday Salon until I realized that it boxed me into this day corner that was no longer aligned when I moved it to Mondays, is now open for new humans to play with us. I had closed, I closed it for a while I was awaiting the rebrand and getting used to the new time, which is Mondays at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. So we have an hour-long call once a week. The calls always start with a meditation, and then we go into the prompt, which is designed to help us know ourselves better, to help us love ourselves in all of our complicated totality. Know Thyself Salon has been going strong for 4 years, almost 5 years now, and we've had the same core group, which I am super proud of, and it makes me feel so warm and fuzzy that for 4 years, this core group has loved Know Thyself Salon enough to stick with it. I myself have grown so much with the support of Know Thyself Salon. Because I'm not just she who facilitates the calls, I am she who participates in the calls. And there's just something special about having a consistent group who's devoted to self-knowledge, who's willing to take 100% responsibility for their and our experience of reality, and who is supporting and loving and encouraging me and all of us to grow and to realize our potential. So that's the plug for Know Thyself Salon. As you are interested, you can message me to join us. You can go to the patreon.com/KnowThyselfSalon. And the reason why I brought it up is because at the end of the year, we were assessing everything that we had learned. And as I said, if I've already shared this, surprise! I'm going to share it again because it's just such a layered breakthrough for me. So, one of the questions that I'd had for everyone on the call was, what did you learn about the world this year when we were doing our 2024 wrap up? And what I shared, which I noticed people on the call found a little bit disturbing and were thinking maybe it was negative, was that most people suck. But for me, it's been the most positive revelation and realization because for the bulk of my life, I had been meeting people from living into their best self, right? So I would meet people at their potential and I would treat everyone as their highest iteration of themselves. So I was meeting people as though they were operating with an integrity, as though they were pop operating with transparency, as though they were operating with kindness, and with my and everyone's best interests in mind. And while that might be adorable, idealistic, delusional, all of the above, what it really was a giant setup for constant disappointment, like constant disappointment. And what it was doing was keeping me on this emotional roller coaster of like expecting the best of people and then, not getting it. And so the beauty of this realization is I don't have those expectations of people. Now, I'm not expecting people to be scumbag douchebags, but I am coming at them with neutrality. And part of me sharing this is a reminder to myself because, like everything, right? It's two steps forward, one step back, 50 steps forward, three steps back. Mercury is either retrograde or well on its way to retrograde at the time of this recording. And so I had another batch of disappointments in human beings this week, but it was just a reminder, a beautiful reminder and lesson of like, how about we don't have expectations that people are going to be amazing so that I can keep myself in a really beautiful, detached, neutral state? So that was one piece. Here's another piece. As always, on the like social engineering front, and we're going to go into quite a bit of social engineering today, I'm very diligent with letting restaurants who move into deeper and deeper levels of automation and AI and tech dependency, I let them know very respectfully and very kindly that I'm not down with that. So, and I'm sharing this because I'm encouraging you and me and all of us to do the same. Remember, the social engineers, the futurist techno-fascist overlords are trying to NLP us into thinking, and that's neuro-linguistic programming for those not hip to that acronym, but they're trying to NLP us into thinking that we have no choice about where our future goes, where our earthship goes, where our society goes. But we are all culture creators, society creators, earth stewards, et cetera. And so our say does matter. And it doesn't have to go the way of AI and techno-fascism. And our favorite restaurant stores, they don't have to go that way. We held a lot of power as the people. So I share these stories with you as a means of modeling and encouraging you to do the same. And again, with kindness and with respect so that we're heard, and to stand for our rights as consumers and as citizens, and to stand for what feels good to us. And I'm gonna pause for a second because this fan really wants to be on. I ordered takeout from one of my favorite restaurants here in Santa Fe, and they have it really dialed, and they probably set it up during lockdowns. I'm not really sure. This restaurant doesn't take reservations. There's always an insane wait. The food is freaking delicious. But so when you go in, well, I don't even have to go inside because their whole takeout thing is just a window outside, and there's like a shelf, and that's how we transact. So I went to pick up my order, and there's a young man, probably, 19, 20 behind the counter. And he rings me up and he goes, "Do you want to leave a tip?" And I thought, that's freaking weird and bold. Like, and you guys have probably heard me before, like, I'm really not down with everyone being tipped for just breathing oxygen or doing their jobs. I waited tables for 12 years. I know very well what waiters go through to earn their tips. And I also know what it's like to earn less than minimum wage and be dependent upon tips to earn my living. So it really doesn't, I think it's bizarro enough when like the girl who's making my matcha latte is expecting a tip, or the guy who took my to-go order and all he's doing is like taking, maybe putting some boxes in a bag and handing it to me is wanting to be tipped for that. Like, in the grand scheme of where tipping came from, when I think of what I went through as a waitress, so you're waiting on someone for what? Anywhere from an hour to like 2-3 hours if it's like a larger party. You're greeting them, you're taking their order, you're bringing their drinks, you're making sure they have the right silverware, fine dining, you're changing out the silverware, you're collecting all the plates, you're dealing with the bussers, the runners, the bartenders, you're carrying trays of drinks. Like, when I worked at the Peninsula in Beverly Hills, and we used to call that blood money. The Peninsula was known for its tea service. Oh my God, tea service, such a pain in the butt, because you're preparing the teapot and then you're preparing the little like extra water on the side, and everything goes in a tea cozy. And at the Peninsula, we weren't allowed to pre-cut our lemons because it's 5 stars and that makes them not fresh enough. So you're cutting it all in real time, putting the cookies on the plate. All I'm saying is, it's a lot of work. And not only is it a lot of work for the waiter, because it's not just one table, it's like 10 tables at the same time, but you're also the face. So it's like being kind and respectful, being ahead of what your customers need. So seeing, oh, she needs a refill on her iced tea, or she's gonna need another, lemonade or glass of wine or whatever it is. And, anticipating what all of your tables are going to need at the same time, like lobbying and advocating for your tables with the head chef who's got a bug up his ass about someone wanting sauce on the side, or advocating, with the busboy to clear a table when he's got 6 other tables to clear, right? So it's a lot of work that is like, yes, it makes sense why those people are tipped. Taking a phone order, writing it down or typing it in the computer and handing someone something, I don't see why that's deserving of a tip. But then on top of that, there's the like etiquette obliterating fumble of asking for a tip. Like, are you freaking kidding me? And I have another example of this, but I just want to stick with this, but I'm going to make a note. You know what? No, I'm not. I'm gonna go totally nonlinear on us because Aquarius Sun, Aquarius North Node. I think it's really gauche to use that word. Like, it's weird when people ask for tips. Or now when I go to the co-op, before it used to be, do you want a roundup for charity? And it was always like, that's freaking bullshit. Charity is like this giant umbrella term for what? For USAID, for Planned Parenthood, for, let's give puppies to homeless drug addicts. Like, what does charity even mean? But now they don't even like go through those auspices. Now it's just, do you want to round up? Like, why? Why would I round up? Why? So you can have a tip for, again, doing your job. So it's like, again, frogs boiling. These are incremental encroachments. We're just have to like give everyone money. And it's the like social bullying. Like for me, I don't care if someone in line judges me because I say no. And I don't say no thank you, and I don't offer an explanation, which I see so many people do. I gave at the office. I don't really care. The guy behind the counter says, do you want to run up for charity? No. Going back to what I was just saying, they don't even say that. Do you want to round up? No. Mm-mm. I want you to do your job and not be gross about it. How about that? But going back to, so the kid asked for a tip, which completely shocked me. And I said, well, can I see the printed receipt? Because that's where I would normally write in a tip or not. And he goes, oh, we can't do that. And I'm like, you can't give me an indication of what I'm approving that you run my card for? Like, what is that about? So we see this as the next iteration of going to a restaurant and instead of bringing me a check, handing me a little computer. It's like, I don't want to touch your little disgusting computer. And I certainly don't want to touch your little disgusting computer while you're hovering over me, like positionally bullying me into tipping you more than I'm organically going to want to tip. Now, keep in mind, I'm a huge tipper because I was a waitress. So like, it actually works the opposite on me. If you're gonna hover over me or ask for a tip, you're gonna get nothing. But if you'd left me alone and just offered me a printed check, you would get a giant tip. So I end up calling the restaurant. No, I emailed the restaurant because I want to give restaurants a chance to do the right thing before like going to Yelp and like destroying them. That's not going to serve anyone. I love this restaurant. I want them to do well. So I just sent her an email saying, look, you know, I had a weird experience. As the customer, it doesn't feel good to me that I can't see a printout of what I'm paying for before I authorize payment. We all make mistakes. And it feels like it's very dishonoring of the customers that we're just supposed to trust you and that we don't get to see it. It feels like coercion. And beyond that, I don't appreciate being asked for a gratuity, especially when I'm just doing takeout. So the woman who owned the restaurant, she handled it really well. She was super sweet. She got back to me quickly. She's like, thank you for emailing me directly. You know, the cashier was new. He didn't know. You know, he understands now. Cool. I understand that. I was a young person once. I made a bunch of like really freaking stupid mistakes. I get it. She said, well, with the new system, I don't really think it's possible for us to show you a printed receipt, but if you want to come into the restaurant to look at the screen, you can do that. And I messaged her back and I'm like, that doesn't feel respectful to me. Like, I recognize that you're in some sort of like technological race to keep up and to render your business more efficient. But if you're doing that at the expense of your customer's safety and comfort, that's not okay. Like, it's not okay to just charge me without giving me a visual on what you're charging me for. Just the week before, I took my friend out and I was charged for a whole bottle of sake instead of just his glass of sake, which was an extra $150 they tacked on. If I didn't look at the receipt, I wouldn't have seen that. So she was very polite and she's like, okay, well, I think there's a way, you know, that the cashiers can show you the screen. Granted, this is not my preference, but this is where we're at. And at this point, I feel like it's very important. I'm not going to say more important to maintain positive relationships with the physical sentient human beings who are the ones who are implementing these like techno-fascist enslavement pieces. And I said, okay, well, I hope that you'll make that part of the actual protocol so that your customers aren't put on the spot where they have to ask the cashier to show them. And she's like, I totally hear you. I totally get it. We have a staff meeting tomorrow. We will do that. So that felt like, I mean, what's a win these days? It felt like me doing my part to stand up for human beings in the face of this attempted techno-fascist takeover. So that was on the list in terms of like also just the social engineering of don't ask for a tip. Don't ask for a tip. And if you have a job that you don't feel like you're being paid enough, but isn't a job that like really you deserve tips, then that's really on you. And that's not on the customer to have to make up for, you know, your boss not paying you enough. Like, not everything is tip worthy. And this is like that culture of mediocrity thing where, like, when I was waiting tables, we would earn our tips, right? It was like being kind, being competent, being fast, all of those things. Now people are just like picking their asses and they think they deserve a tip. And if we tip mediocrity, then we are rewarding mediocrity, then we're going to get more mediocrity. So you and I are the ones who are standing between this being normalized. And I share these things so that you and I are emboldened to do our parts to safeguard against these types of affronts and demoralization efforts. To this end, I spoke at my city council meeting yesterday because there's a huge demoralization effort going on here in New Mexico, and specifically in Santa Fe, and the censorship is over the top. So what I'm learning is there's no posting about it on social media because all those posts get taken down. All of the local papers are co-opted and censoring, so I'm not going to get my, you know, message into the public record there. But when I go to the city council meetings, they don't have a choice but to let me speak, and they're broadcast on the internet. So there's all this hullabaloo right now going on in Santa Fe around the obelisk. And I think I've spoken about this before, but I'm gonna go over just the basics to catch us up to speed. October 2020, remember Soros was funding, you know, whoever, Act Blue, the Democratic Party, Obama, like whoever, I don't claim to know, was funding all of these violent Antifa riots, right? And remember, where the rest of us were on lockdown and not allowed to leave the house, rioters were good to go. So these rioters from out of town who don't live here took down the statue on the plaza. The obelisk, also called the Soldier's Monument, it marked the end of the Spanish-Indian War. And it's part of this city's history. And so we know that a big part of the globalist agenda is erasing people's history, right? Like, look what happened with the Indian population when they take their language away. So the same thing is going on here. So a federal judge decided in December, or federal court, that the city of Santa Fe has to restore the obelisk. It has to put it back. They haven't done that. They're trying to weasel their ways out of it. Why? Because the lizards, the civil servants who supposedly were elected to represent the people here in Santa Fe, are actually driving the globalist agenda. And so their goal is to demoralize Santa Fe, to bring down the moral character, to create more division, and to basically poop all over our city. And so what I'm doing at these city council meetings is I'm not taking the usual polarizing tack. I'm talking about things from a higher angle that aren't divisive, that aren't partisan, right? I'm not weighing in on the statue should be taken down, the statue shouldn't be taken down. What I'm weighing in on, what I weighed in on last night, was for 4.5 years, I find it odd that you couldn't scrounge together $1,000 to remove the graffiti from what's left of the statue, because there's a big like layered, like, you know, big chunks of concrete upon which the obelisk itself stood, and all of that is graffitied out to this day. And I'm like, I find it odd that you haven't been able to remove the graffiti, thus demonstrating a modicum of dignity and self-respect for our capital city, which is an international destination. I find it odd, Mr. Mayor and City Council people, that you're not embarrassed that you have left that graffiti up, thus making Santa Fe seem like a lawless, vandalized poop hole, right? So That's not a partisan issue, right? I'm tackling these things from an angle where it's like, how can you defend leaving the graffiti up? And what I also gave them, and I'm sharing this again just to maybe inspire you guys to do the same. Look, I am aware that the whole like federal control grid is a joke. I'm not really going to move the needle there by sending letters to Pam Bondi or Donald Trump or what have you, but local politics is very different. So we're also doing this thing here in Santa Fe, and this is what all of the most recent city council meetings have been about is giving free housing to the homeless by building these pallet homes in residential neighborhoods. Now, all these you know, families in these residential neighborhoods are showing up to the meetings saying, no, I don't want homeless drug addicts living in my neighborhoods, right? And just so you guys know, like lay of the land, which is what I spoke about when I addressed this, is Santa Fe is incentivizing drug use and homelessness to such an extent, and I've heard this from doctors and nurses in the ER, and I've also heard this from law enforcement themselves, that homeless drug addicts are moving here from all over the country because they know how many free services they can get here in Santa Fe, right? So now we're adding on top of that this free pallet housing, which there's a lot of controversy. People want it, don't want it. So once again, I went high level on this. Like, let's just sidestep the controversy and speak sanity to the clown show. So before they were open to public comments, they had multiple city councilors speaking, and to be honest, like grandstanding because it's an election year, and giving these like, it was so over the top, guys. Actually, I am going to tell you what happened. I'm going to pause for a sip. So I'm going to give you the sequence of events because it was freaking dazzling. So I get to the city council meeting when there's some organization who's there behind building the pallet houses, and they had just finished giving their presentation, and now they're taking questions from different city councilors and the mayor. So when I walk in, one of the city councilors is saying, look, we don't have any choice. The community is going to need to lean into this. You guys, the community members, are going to have to do your part. There's no other way around this. So again, notice the manipulative languaging that she's saying this is the only way. Like, she's creating a limitation. She's creating a false, is it a false dichotomy? Maybe if you don't do this, then we're all at the whim of homelessness. By the way, I have talked to law enforcement here who say that 90% of the calls that they're responding to for crime and violent crime here are all because of the homeless situation. So it's really changed the landscape of Santa Fe. So this woman is telling us, Pilar, Councilwoman Pilar, we don't have any choice. Like, the community needs to lean into this plan. This has to happen. And I'm like, great, great, you know, weaponized languaging manipulation. And then she went back to being on her phone for the whole rest of the time that I was there. And I'm like, wow, it's so embarrassing that this is our city council, that like they can't even be present for a meeting without scrolling and giggling. And you could tell she was scroll, 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 like so embarrassing. So then after she speaks, another city councilwoman spoke, and she actually asked a smart question about this needs to be sustainable. Like, it can't just be a band-aid over the homeless situation where we're giving free handouts to the same people. Like, what programs are you planning to implement so that these people are, this is temporary and they are going to be rehabilitated? And then the people doing the presentation clearly didn't understand the question, clearly were not that smart. And then they spoke to the sustainability of the pallet homes themselves and how they could be reused. So I'm just like, oh my God, it's like the blind leading the blind, like so stupid. And then the city councilwoman, like, she was very kind, but she repeated her whole thing, which took another, I don't know, like 5 minutes. But then this other councilwoman who'd been on her phone the whole time, Castro, she gets off her phone and she speaks only in Spanish. She addresses the two people presenting only in Spanish. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me with the virtue signaling? So Mayor Weber, who's originally from the East Coast and then came to us by way of Seattle, I don't know if he's fluent in Spanish. I'm not fluent in Spanish. Here in America, like we speak English, the two international languages spoke around the world are Spanish and French. Yes, I understand there's a large Spanish-speaking population here in Santa Fe, but it was just so over the top virtue signaling because, like, I didn't speak Spanish. She doesn't know how many other constituents speak Spanish. If the city manager speaks Spanish, like, it was just so. It was so cringe on the virtue signaling. So then the mayor takes his turn and he's like, this isn't really a question. And then he just goes off on this like kind of fake, not really well executed, impassioned lecture on how important it is that this serve the 15 veterans whose names they know because of some sort of data collection program that he mentioned by name, and he's just grandstanding about these veterans whose names we know and they have to be taken care of. And it was so obvious and cringe, guys, that like it's an election year and he's about to announce that he's running for re-election. Like it was so clear. He was just taking the opportunity to totally grandstand, like a Josh Hawley, like a Senator Kennedy, like all these things we see that went nowhere. So then this other city councilman, Michael Garcia, when I came in, was actually asking really smart questions where I'm like, I'm kind of impressed by this guy. He actually seems like he cares about the people. So not to be outdone, then Councilman Garcia grabs the mic and he's like, oh, I just have one more thing to add that I would hope that, any treatment of veterans is better than this current administration's empty promises. And then the mayor goes, that's out of line. And then I burst out laughing, like my super loud, like way too obnoxious dork laugh, just watching them have this like little pissing contest that was so obvious and optical. Like, I actually kind of believe that Michael Garcia was for realsies, but. Mayor Weber, this guy's like a known defund the police globalist. And my point in all of this is like, Mayor Weber doesn't care about the people of Santa Fe. He doesn't care about the city of Santa Fe. His job is to demoralize and destroy this city. And it's so clear by his actions. So then we go to the public comment. And so I brought in, I'm like, I find it interesting to hear all of you city councilmen and councilmen saying that the community needs to lean into this pallet housing because it's the only solution and it's an all hands on deck situation that demands that the community lean into this plan. But I don't see you guys taking responsibility for the root cause, which is you guys incentivizing homelessness and drug use to such an extent that people are moving here from all over the country to get the free services that Santa Fe provides. So you're saying it's all hands on deck for us, but you're not willing to stop incentivizing it. So I spoke to that, but then I offered them a solution, which is like a solution that we can all employ. And it's something that for years and years and years has kind of plagued me as far as like, why are we not doing this? So, the whole recycling scam where if you have like a big bag of recycling, and say they're doing it at like a recycling center and there's a big batch of recycling, but there's like one yogurt container that hasn't been cleaned out and the label hasn't been removed, then that entire batch of recycling cannot be recycled and it ends up going into a landfill. So most of what we think we're recycling is actually not being recycled and is ending up in a landfill, right? And everyone's like, that sucks. Oh well, which has never made sense to me. So part of what I've been doing at these city council meetings is I don't want to just be another Santa Fe person who's browbeating them with everything they're doing wrong. I want to offer them solutions. Now, I'd really rather be hired as a solutions consultant and a leadership consultant, and perhaps this is paving the way. But after I gave them that little zinger, I said, here's a solution I'm offering you. How about in exchange for the free housing that there's all this controversy over building, but we all know you're going to do it anyway because you're not interested. I did not say this. But the reality is, they don't seem to be interested in what their constituents actually want. But I said, how about in exchange for free housing, all of these homeless people are required to work at the recycling center, cleaning out containers and removing labels so that A, they could be giving back to the community that's giving quite a bit to them. And we as a community can be up-leveling our recycling efficiency and our environmental footprint. So I was like, okay, I just gave them something. And this is something that I'm not understanding isn't happening at recycling centers everywhere. Why aren't we hiring people to clean out the containers instead of just saying, oh, well, they're dirty, these go in a landfill. Like, it's so lazy. It's like all of these issues like aren't really that hard to solve if we're willing to take an extra step or two. So then I reminded them, and I'm encouraging you guys to do this as well, that we have a serious rental crisis here in Santa Fe. Like, it is major. And everyone I know who rents is in a constant state of low level to high level anxiety about if they have to move and try to find something. So I reiterated, because I'd mentioned this in my last time speaking at the city council meeting, we have over 3,000 units that have been taken off the rental market because they're reserved for Airbnb and VRBO. That's also, not only is that 3,000 rental units that are not available to working taxpaying members of our community, that's 300 customers, 3,000 customers. I meant to say 3,000 customers that aren't utilizing our, or you know, giving money to our hotels and motels. It's lose, lose, lose every step of the way. It is time for us to outlaw Airbnb and VRBO. So this was everything I contributed, plus the thing about the obelisk and can we remove the graffiti? And how about, instead of continuing to flagrantly violate the Open Meetings Act by having all of your obelisk meetings behind closed doors, you honor your constituents who you were allegedly elected to represent by allowing us into these meetings so that you can gauge what it is we actually want. Because right now you're talking about, you're allotting $100,000. Check this out, guys. They just decided to give the city manager who just moved here from California, and this is what they do, right? So they bring people into the obelisk project who have no Santa Fe history, so they're not connected to how deep of an issue this is for the actual Santa Fe locals and natives. This is by design, right? The new editor of the Santa Fe Reporter just moved here from Oklahoma. So they bring in these outsiders who have no problem decimating the city or disrespecting, you know, our local culture because they don't even know it. So what I said was, you know, you guys have unilaterally decided to hand $100,000, get this, $100,000 to the city manager to give to a consultant to look into what it would take to relocate the obelisk to a cemetery. So there's not putting $100,000 into cleaning off the graffiti. They're not putting $1,000 into restoring it as a federal judge decided. And keep in mind, it was not taken down lawfully or by the will of the people. But they're also doing this without the consent of the people. So I said, you know, you've just allotted $100,000 for a consultant to pay someone, you know, to examine whether or not we should move it. I don't recall as your constituents being asked if I wanted to move the obelisk from the center of our city to a graveyard, which is a pretty grim symbol, if you ask me. So again, calling them in, like going high level, and this is my recommendation when people come to me around like, well, how do I talk about hot button issues when people are assuming that I'm on their same page, right? I cannot tell you how much this is coming up with my coaching and consulting clients these days. You know, I have like a yoga teacher client who's like, everyone in town just assumes that I'm a liberal and that I'm super freaking out and upset about Trump being elected. How do I address it? So my answer is the same, whether we're talking about the obelisk, whether we're talking about homelessness, or we're talking about Trump, is go high level macro. Just go to the macro where no one can argue with you, where there, that polarization no longer applies, right? If we go high enough outside of the low vibe divisiveness, we can get to the construct. So, you know, what I said to the yoga teacher is, I would just say two things. One, my happiness and my safety isn't determined by politics or who's in the Oval Office. Like, I'm far more empowered and self-directed than that. And I would also say, you know what, I'm a yoga practitioner, so I really stick with ahimsa, the principle of nonviolence. So I don't actually, it's just not my practice to gossip or speak negatively about people that I don't know, right? So we go high level, it like people, it's just like a disruption of their usual, the scripts that they're running, because let's not kid ourselves, these are scripts, right? We're all dealing with different levels of mind control, so we can all be susceptible to running these scripts. But when someone's running a script, you don't want to come at them at the level of the script. You don't want to combat the frequency of the script. It's going to be infinitely more useful, more efficient and effective to take the higher level, go above the script, and poke at the construct itself. So that's what I've been doing at these city council meetings, is I'm not getting into the muck where the polarizing controversy is. I'm going high level to, like, I'm sure we could all agree that it's not okay that they're violating the Open Meetings Act, whether we want it restored or not. I'm sure we can all agree that it's been 5 years and it's about time that we move the graffiti from the center of the capital city's plaza. Right? So I encourage you guys to do this in, you know, whatever realms are happening in your world. Go higher, go macro, question the construct, poke at the construct. It also calls us into our higher humanity, where we can all actually unite on removing the graffiti. We can all actually unite on improving our city's recycling efforts. We can all unite on, you know, creating ways for the homeless to give back, right? All right, let's get into the new stuff, because I do know that I've spoken about that, but I'm also so impassioned these days. About these days, as though I'm not always impassioned about staving off injustice and tyranny. Anyway, because I've gotten re-involved in local politics, I talk about these things. Let's move on, okay? So we're gonna stick with Santa Fe demoralization, but we're gonna go into some languaging, and I'm gonna do a screen share. So you heard me talking about how they're incentivizing homelessness and drug use here in Santa Fe. What proof do I have, you ask? How is this happening? I'm so glad you asked, and I'm gonna give you an example right here. This is a public service announcement that is emblazoned all over Santa Fe as well as the state of New Mexico. So I'm gonna share my screen. This kicky little public service announcement is all over Santa Fe. So this, I will see this, all these flyers are posted like at every CVS, at every, you know, drugstore. And these are also billboards all over New Mexico. So we're gonna break down the languaging and the subconscious programming here. Never use fentanyl. No, it doesn't say that. Never use alone. And we have two fentanyl pills. With fentanyl, the uncertainty is certain. Always have a rescue buddy with Narcan. So I don't know what Narcan is. Let's just look up what Narcan is. It's a drug that can reverse opioid overdose. So it's blatant. The demoralization, remembering that demoralization is the first stage in ideological subversion, which was Yuri Bezmenov's four-step process of taking over a country, communist takeover, and in our instances, a techno-fascist globalist takeover from the inside, right? So we have the mayor, all these players are trying to take Santa Fe, New Mexico down from inside. So I'm gonna return us to our screen share. I wanna go back to our lovely Santa Fe, New Mexico public service announcement. Never use alone. With fentanyl, the uncertainty is certain. Always have a rescue buddy with Narcon. Okay, so clearly they're trying to sell some sort of pharmaceutical, but if this were a real public service, it would just say never use fentanyl, right? But look, it has two pills. So the programming going into our visual cortex, to the, you know, the visual part of the brain, is don't take one fentanyl, take two. You know, it's great marketing to sell twice as much. And there's no dissuading the fentanyl use. They're encouraging the fentanyl use. They're showing you, you know, and I don't know if these are two different pills, but it's clear to me how much they're trying to demoralize and destroy us as a populace because of their pushing of fentanyl. We have such a rampant fentanyl problem here in New Mexico. But this is Santa Fe's, I guess, fentanyl mitigation campaign, where it's like, but we can sell twice as much fentanyl. We can create, you know, twice as much of a problem, and we can create twice as many drug addicts by encouraging fentanyl, a fentanyl buddy system, instead of just don't use fentanyl and like putting a stop to it. So this is what I was speaking to when I was said to the city council, like, you want all of us to lean in and like welcome these pallet houses full of homeless drug addicts into our neighborhoods, but you're not willing to stop incentivizing fentanyl use and all of the free healthcare, free food, free housing, like all of that around it. Got it. So I wanted to share that piece and just point to the programming. It's not saying never use fentanyl. That would be a far more effective campaign. Or here are the, you know, these are the risks of fentanyl. But instead, they're implanting these two pills in our mind and then like get a buddy or buy this other pharmaceutical to help you with your illegal opioid addiction, whatever. So freaking gross. Okay. Last one for today, which is really, once again, in my opinion, the juiciest. I saw this, so let me just give you a little bit of a backstory. I had a meeting at a coffee house here, and it is a very, I don't even like using the word woke, but it's a very woke coffee house. And side note, there's someone who works there. He's very nice. He's clearly very gay. And he works behind the counter of a coffee house, wearing belly shirts. So the shirt is gonna be up to here. And then he'll wear like low cut pants. So dudes have like treasure trail, pubic hair. And look, be gay, do crime. Be gay, don't do crime. That's a Moomin Troll reference for those who are not familiar with the Finn family that is the Moomin Trolls. But I have no problem with being gay, with being flagrantly gay, all of those things. But if you're making my beverage, I don't want all of your pubic hair to be exposed to the point that it could get into my beverage. I mean, again, I've worked in coffee houses, I've waited tables. We never showed our bellies because it's like not super hygienic. So it's something that weirds me out at this coffee house of like, that's great that you love your belly and your crop tops, but it's not really super appropriate. And this is like, I mean, talk about demoralization. People not dressing professionally. I mean, look at freaking Fetterman. It's great you had a stroke. It's great that you're, you know, a Democrat who's sane and still has critical thinking in terms of your alignments, right? I love all of that, but like, it is ultimately demoralizing for the entire culture to see an elected civil servant show up for work in a sweatshirt and sweatshorts. Like, I just don't think that's great modeling for kids. I think it's totally inappropriate and demoralizing how Trump speaks, period, and how completely divisive his new press secretary is. I guess the theme of today is demoralization. that a number one, you know, step one of ideological subversion, shredding a people's morality, lowering the vibe of culture across the board. I just did a propaganda presentation a few hours before recording this. So I mean, there are a ton of slides. You know what? Screw it. I'm gonna share the slides because I put it together. I am thinking of starting to do monthly propaganda webinars. So this might be happening. If you're tuning in, please weigh in. Would you be interested in attending an hour-long webinar on the war on our minds, propaganda and the globalist agenda? Inquiring minds want to know. Okay, so I'm going to do some screen sharing. Now, a lot of these slides are coming from my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy course. So I mentioned that at the beginning of this podcast. So what I'm sharing now will be a little tiny window into that 11 module course. But these are just a few examples of how demoralization is showing up in our culture now. Okay, so here we go. So here we have the Yuri Bezmenov four stages of ideological subversion. One, first step is demoralization, second step destabilization, third step crises, which is where we see a lot of the big false flags, the 9/11, the COVID, the, you know, Maui fires, Malibu fires, the, you know, all of these things count as the crises, right? And think problem, reaction, solution, Hegelian dialectic, you know, setting up the this problem, reaction, solution, right? So in this instance, just really briefly, 9/11. Okay, the solution they always have at the ready. Oh, we want to put in the Patriot Act and rescind people's rights. We want to put TSA in the airports and all of these things. But how are we going to do that unless there's some big crisis? So we create the crisis, the same guy, right, who's holding the solution and the crisis. Okay, here, let's take down the Twin Towers. Then this guy is going to be like, ah, the terrorists, it's so scary. Help me, daddy government. And daddy government's like, I'm happy to. Here's the Patriot Act and TSA. And you get way less civil liberties, right? That's how that works. But going back to the demoralization, here are just some examples. This is our culture. That does it for the first half of today's podcast. As you are inspired to tune in to the second half, you can find it on both my Locals and Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannykatz.locals.com and patreon.com/dannykatz. At both of my membership communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content. I do feel inspired to let you know that if you're looking for Words, the podcast that I record with Emily Moyer, not only is that available at wordspodcast.locals.com, it is available for my $10 and higher subscribers on both Patreon and Locals. There's been a little confusion about that, and I want to give you a full lay of the land so that you can make an informed decision when choosing which tier or how much to be supporting me at the platform of your choice. As well, my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy class, which I did mention and actually share some images from, I think it's in the second half actually of today's podcast, is available for immediate and lifetime access at dannykatz.com. I think that does it for housekeeping. Oh, last reminder to sign up for my newsletter, and whatever platform on which you are listening or tuning into my podcast now, be it Spotify, Progressive Radio Network, United Alt Media, Apple Podcasts, what have you, would you please be so kind as to subscribe and even leave me a 5-star review? I'm starting to pay more attention to these things as I'm realizing it is very much time for this girl to get paid for these podcasts. And in tracking sponsorship, it's very helpful to have subscriptions and reviews and all of those things. And I appreciate your support in helping me expand and have a bigger and more positive impact. So thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.